You are listening to. First Gen Teachers Lens.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of First Gen Teacher Lens. This is continuing our book talk series where I bring guests that have books that I think are valuable to the classroom. This time I have guest CJ Reynolds, aka Real Rap Reynolds, talk about his book called The Real Rap Guide to Teaching. Check it out. Listen to the episode. Stay tuned, like, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Peace.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the First Gen Teacher Lens. My name is Mr. C, host. And continuing our book talk series, we have another guest. His name is...
CJ Reynolds.
Hey, CJ, thanks for coming on. I always like wanted you on, you know, like it's been, I know we're all busy people, but like I did read your book. It's called Teach Your Class Off. If you haven't read it, it's a must read for, I want to say all teachers out there, new teachers, veteran teachers, definitely gets you a new perspective on a lot of things. And so I invited you on because I think this book is like very valuable to a lot of educators in the field. You know, it gives us perspectives about and kind of nuance about like being in the actual field. Like you give your own personal story about becoming a teacher. But before we get into the book, one of the first questions is, what inspired you to actually start writing this book?
So, you know, I think when I started teaching, there were a handful of books that I read, like Harry Wong's book and like a bunch of books by Rafe Esquith. And those were great, but they didn't seem attainable. It seemed like those folks were like far beyond like what I could do, or like even some of the Harry Wong stuff, like just didn't vibe with how, like with the person that I was. So, you know, we started this YouTube channel several years ago. And that YouTube channel is really meant to like help teachers that are new or veteran teachers that just needed a different sort of perspective, or really just for folks that felt like maybe they were a little bit more like us, meaning like I'm kind of a weird dude, man. Like I do a lot of weird stuff in class. I like to try a lot of stuff. I love being high energy. And so we tried to start creating content for folks. And then that led to people that wanted a podcast, people that wanted a book, people that wanted us to speak. And so, I say us, cause my wife helps me just as much as I do anything for this business, but like, that wanted me to speak. And so we created a book that really we wish existed like when I started teaching, like something that I could have turned to as a high school teacher. And so that's really where it jumped off.
Right. So kind of like a, not a blueprint, Will, but like kind of like a guide. That's what I gleaned from it when I was like reading it.
Yeah. And like, I always tell folks, like, you don't always have to go with exact, because there are things that I say in the book that I'm like, I even say in the book, like, don't do this. But like, see if maybe you can go with the spirit of what we're doing here. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is important. So yeah, it's not like a necessarily like a how-to guide, but it's like, here's all this stuff that worked for me that I just kind of like made up on the way. And I think it could work for a lot of other people too.
No, I definitely agree. That's what I gleaned from it. And then one of the chapters, I don't want to like dig too deep so people can actually go read it, but like one of the chapters, you describe your first years in teaching. So my second question is, what did your first years in teaching actually teach you?
So I got hired. My first job was as I taught ninth grade English in Camden, New Jersey, which is one of the poorest cities in the country. And that felt like that was where I was supposed to be, like missionally, I wanted to work on the margins with folks. And so I work at this small charter school there. And I think part of it was, I thought that like kids wanted good teachers, but they just like didn't exist, or like they just hadn't had them yet or something. So I wanted to show up and like really build relationships with kids. I wanted to like really put my all into the job to create opportunities for students and to work with the other folks on the staff and to be a part of a community. And then I realized that kids were not waiting for me. They didn't care that I was there. They didn't care that I had like the best of intentions or that like I wanted to do a good job or that, you know, I wanted to have fun. No one cared about that. So, and I realized that like, it was really about making connections with kids and with families. And that was going to be like the bedrock of my classroom. It wasn't going to be like the lessons that I taught. It wasn't going to like that, that could all come later, but I had to have this connection piece first. And then I, you know, didn't realize like, look, I mean, I'm a 40-year-old. I was then a 27-year-old, like white dude from a neighborhood that was basically the Sandlot. Like that's where I grew up. Mm-hmm. Where no one locked their doors. We didn't have to put our bikes away at night. Like I just like had this very kind of like 1950s-ish, like wholesome upbringing. And then to work in the neighborhood that I worked in, you think you know what's going on in certain neighborhoods and with certain students and with folks in the country, but you just don't. Like I didn't know who my students really were. I didn't know where they had come from. I didn't know the things that they were dealing with. And so it took a lot of like unpacking a lot of that sort of thing too, where I had to realize like I had to really like not just get to know like what my students liked or where they lived or what their interests were, but like really take a deep dive into the culture of like what it meant to be from Camden, like what it meant to be like a black and brown young person from Camden and in that school system and growing up through a lot of things that them and their families were growing up through. And that took a lot of unpacking and a lot of years of learning and stuff that I'm still unpacking and learning now.
Were there any, I guess like for just like, I'm reflecting my first year, were there any like moments where you're like thinking back where it was just like, that's a moment that I often reflect upon it, where it was like kind of a teachable moment for you?
We kind of talked about this before the show. I had a moment where I created this lesson based on Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, because I was going to make it like about, we had to learn persuasive essay, and I was like, oh dude, it's like Black History Month, so we'll do this MLK I Have a Dream thing. I had this mm-hmm. whole plan for it, and I thought it was going to be awesome. I'd done it when I did student teaching, and it was really, really great. And like even my supporting teacher really loved it. So I was like, oh, this is the one thing I have in the bag for the year. Like, I know this is going to work. And like 5 minutes into it, some kid asked to go to the bathroom. Then like five other people wanted to go to the bathroom. I'm like, guys, no, wait, we're watching the I Have a Dream speech. It's like a monumental moment. And no one liked it. And then they started asking, like, do we have to do this? And I thought, what are you talking about? Like I planned this thing for like 2 or 3 weeks and it failed. So what I had to learn to do in that moment, and I don't even know that I really understood it, was like, I remember like sitting in front of the kids the next day and going, well, then what do you want to learn? Like, what do you want to do then? Like, and not like in an aggravated way. It was like, what can we do that would be fun? And then we came up with a plan. Like the kids, like we worked through what kids would actually want to do in class, and then we made it happen. So then I took what kids were interested in. I still fit all the stuff that I had to learn into that. And then we kind of developed this plan going forward, and we had this amazing lesson instead on the Harlem Renaissance, and we turned our room into a museum, which all the kids created different exhibits, and then they had to curate them. And we had a day where like folks came in and they would walk around and kids would talk about the projects that they made and the people that they were talking about. And it was unbelievable. It was like, it's still one of my favorite memories. And it's still something that when I see students from that class that they'll still bring up that they loved that year. So, I think that was one of the biggest shifts for me that year.
Right. So you took like, I guess this concept of Black history, made it like kind of, I want to say tangible for students, where they actually had items where they were like, analyzing and then assessing where, all right, this is like the person I'm focusing on, this is what they did. And it was kind of like, I'm thinking of like a gallery walk, if you will, like
exactly.
Okay, gotcha.
Like steroids. It was crazy, but it was, one of the things we're always saying is that like education is only ever about the students. Mm-hmm. And when we remember that, we have to look at what we're teaching through the eyes of the students to see where that connection point is going to be, and then figure out what kids like, figure out what you need to teach. And then it's our job to blend the two so that we are creating engagement for students so that they can feel seen and heard and cared about and thought of when we are creating lessons in the classroom.
Right. And then I think like that kind of picks up on like where my third question is, where it's kind of asking, when I was reading the book, and then I think like there's the exclamation point after, like, what do you want to learn? And that kind of hit me, like, that's actually a powerful statement to ask, you know, children, like, what do you want to do? What do you want? What's your interest? And I can just think of right now, my students' interest probably like Fortnite. Clearly I got this shirt, even though listeners can't see it, but like a kid gave me a shirt that has Eat Sleep Fortnite on it. And probably what's the other game? Rocket League. And for some odd reason, for the past 2 weeks, the Backyardigans. I don't know why, but they've been listening to that Backyardigans for some reason.
All right.
Jamming out to this one song that's on the top of the billboards right now, which is crazy. So my third question is, why is it important to ask students what they want to learn in that moment? What did that teach you?
It taught me that, look, I mean, anyone that grew up in hip hop culture would know this for sure, but like even pop culture, it's constantly moving. It's constantly focused on what is fresh, what is new, what is innovative. And as soon as somebody's aunt started saying something was the bomb, every young person got rid of that, right? So like every time somebody, there's like, this is just how slang works, right? Like, or artists work, or like, I remember being in high school and if my favorite band got on the radio, I was done. Like, I'm done with you now. Like, you're now your mainstream and I can't do that anymore, because I grew up really loving hip hop and punk rock. And so once somebody hit the Billboard charts, it was a wrap. And so I think that students are often like that too. So even though I created this really great lesson with the Harlem Renaissance and all the stuff in my first year of teaching, I never did that lesson, or I tried to do that lesson again, but it didn't replicate as well the second time because it wasn't focused on those students. It was, again, looking at the students in my neighborhood, in my school, that were part of a certain demographic, and thinking, oh, kids of this certain age and place, like, will enjoy this. And that's not the case because every year is different. So right. What I learned was that you can use Fortnite, but then it is going to turn into Rocket League, and then it's going to turn into something even weirder that you never heard of because it's some niche game on Roblox that you're like, what is, I don't even understand what Roblox is. It just looks like insanity all the time. And then it's going to be some new artist that you never heard of or some show that you never heard of. And what I learned was that it is a never-ending pivot. You're not necessarily changing curriculum. What you're doing is you're shifting the access point for students. So like when I used to teach vocab based on, you know, Jersey Shore, the show on MTV, it was the jam that year. And I did that for several years. And then no one watched that show anymore. So I shifted and I had to make all my vocab on something else. And so it's this ever evolving thing that really causes us to get to know students so that we can know who they are and where they're coming from, what they love, and what lights them up, so that we can then take that and turn it back into our curriculum so that it comes alive for kids.
Right. It's not a cookie cutter curriculum, doesn't fit one size fits all. Like, you know, you think about like a cap, right? Or something that says one size fits all. It doesn't realistically meet the needs of your students. Like, how are you gonna, you know, not every kid's the same. Everybody's gonna be, you know, assess differently in terms of like, or reach those standards that we teach, you know, differently in different ways. So I think it's very important for her, which I noted in the book, that you kind of evolve over time. And then not only that, but like you bring in guests into your classroom that kind of make it realistic for your students. If I'm not mistaken, like where they talk about tangible things that are applicable to the content, which I think is powerful because, like, you know, as us as educators, like sometimes they need a new voice to kind of tell them, hey, this is what you're learning is actually applicable. Here's why. Yeah. And I think that's like, from what I gleaned from your book, that's like one of the most powerful things that I saw from it. And then for one of my latter questions, I hear this kind of phrase all the time from listening to you and then just reading the book about relationships. Relationships are king, right? Some people may think that old school people may think like, no, like it'll be about like it's content matters, which is like that's where I saw like I could see people pushing back on that, where it's just like that's not true, like the content like definitely matters. What do you mean by relationships are king? And then I guess to the people that do push back on that idea, what do you say to them?
So, you know, when I say relationships are king, I don't mean that content's not important. It's mm-hmm. just not as important, right? If education is indeed only ever about students, then we need to look at kids first and then content, because the kids are going to drive the content. That if I have a relationship with a student, or if I don't have a relationship with a student, so like that's going to decide a lot of times whether or not a kid's going to buy in to what I'm doing. So for instance, I've had any number of students over the years that like, you know, they're ninth grade, they don't want to do work. And I teach at all boys school. Like no one wants to go to all boys school, learn 4 years of Latin and wear a uniform every day. It's not something any young person signs up for willingly. So when they show up, everyone's sort of like disenchanted. So I feel like my job is to make school as awesome as possible so that you might want to show up and to like go back and forth with me, to grow into who you were meant to be. And so, you know, man, I've just had like so many kids over the years that were really going through something, that, you know, a friend died, a parent died, mm-hmm. somebody was locked up, somebody was in foster care, their parents are getting a divorce, like their girlfriend broke up with them. Like, you know, it runs the gamut of severity. And so mm-hmm. in those moments, when we realize that like kids are like, this is some of them, it's the most emotional time of their life, right? Like being in ninth grade is like, you're trying to figure out who you are and what you're about, and you're questioning things about yourself and your family and so on. If I can meet you there, then, and I can show you that I'm a trusted individual. And but when I mean meet you there is like, just listening to you, just listening mm-hmm. to what's going on without any sense that I have to like know the answer for anything. Cause again, like, right. Like I'm a 44-year-old white dude from New Jersey. And now I'm teaching in West Philadelphia, all boys school. Mm-hmm. I have no idea really, like on a head level, I have an idea of where my students come from, but not from a heart level. Mm-hmm. But I can connect with a kid and let them know that I'm there because I realize things like that. My attention is more important than my advice. And I can just show up. Then when I say, I'm starting to see who you are and you're telling me where you want to be. And I'm telling you that what we're doing in class is going to get you there, right? That this is now a game, like education's now a game. And we need to like learn this content so that you can grow into this person you're dreaming of being, so you can affect your family and your community in such a way that it's like, then kids believe you when they tell you, no, this is important. Yo, I need you guys to stop because this is important right now. It's right. already there because you're already connecting with someone. Mm-hmm. And so when I say relationships are king, it means that like it is the bedrock for that. For folks that say it's not, look, I mean, I think that there's no silver bullet in education. I think that mm-hmm. folks can do things all different kinds of ways. They don't have to do anything that I'm doing. They have to make it fun. They don't have to be silly. You know, one of my best friends in school, I actually have a picture of next to me. This woman, Miss Cho, is the most serious person ever. Her syllabus is 7.5 pages long and they read it on the first day of school, and she does not smile until like Valentine's Day. She just skipped right over Christmas. And we're best friends at school because we just want what's right for kids. She's just going a different way. And I think that, you know, my way is not the right way. It's just mm-hmm. all way, but maybe, you know, back to the reason for the book, like maybe someone sees what I'm doing and they go, no, I can align with that. Those are folks that were kind of like building this community and these resources for, so they can be the teacher they always dreamed of being.
Right. I think, and then another thing I gleaned is that you also have like, I guess these intimate moments, like with your students during lunch, which to me was just like, I was thinking back when, you know, pre-COVID when we were still in the building. And like, those are usually fun times. Like you, I sit, chill with the kids, chop up, talk up shop. They like sometimes when like they gossip, but it's fun to hear. Cause like, you know, you get to know your kids and develop like who they are. Not so much as at an academic level, but more so an interpersonal level where you see them as basically a human being. Cause like, you know, they're like, even though there are students and like, there's this, I guess, quasi power imbalance. Cause you're the teacher, you're the student. And then, you know, you have to like follow me. That's not true, but like you get to know them at a deeper level than just like a test score or a quiz grade, which like when I saw, I guess one of your students, I can't remember which one in the book, but they were sitting down with you at lunch and they were talking about, no, I don't eat the as my kids say, the schoolie food. Because it's garbage.
It's awful. It's the worst food in the world, man.
And you know, like you talk to the student, and then you find out that like they're going through this kind of deep, complex emotion, and then you know, out of that, I think at the end of the student, if correct me if I'm wrong, they like thank you, or like because you took time, and then. To understand the severity of their situation. And like, I just thought that was like amazing, man, because like that really helped that kid out. And I think those are the moments where we often like as educators should reflect upon on like, not so much like data standard, but like that kid's gonna remember that moment for probably the rest of his life. He's like, remember, even if he forgets like some of my kids probably forgot my name, but like they'll probably remember that one teacher that we had. He was always like, he dressed up as a judge for like our debate. And like, it was crazy, but like it was so funny. And like kids still till this day, like even my admin remembers that day where I'm just like in there with a wig. So like, yeah, I think it's awesome what you're doing in terms of that. But I guess my last question before we go, for anybody that wants to like connect with you, like link up, find your book, where can they find like all of this information?
Yeah. So wait, before I even say that, I want to just applaud you for that's not easy to do, right? Like, so that sounds fun, right? So people that might listen to this that are thinking about being teachers that are like, oh, I would like to dress up and go to school. Dude, that could go 100 times like the wrong way. Like this is never a sure thing. It's like, bro, I'm about to walk into a school with like essentially a robe on and a wig. Like this could go seven different, you know, ways of wrong, but it takes a level of bravery and of madness to show up and be the teacher that you feel like you were called to be. So like that, I just want to like note that for a moment that like the fact that you even did that is a big deal. And of course those kids should remember that because school is boring as hell, man. And so that if we can do anything, and it doesn't have to be like this kind of like, there's this spotlight on like edutainment right now where there's this separation. It's either like your class is really fun and memorable and crazy, or you're learning stuff. I think it can be both. And so we can bridge those worlds and make school something that kids might actually want to show up for. I think that we're really doing it's an expression of care to the community with which you're working in. And so, I just want to say that real quick. So
thanks.
For me, if you just look up realrapwithreynolds.com is where you can get everything, like the book. You can go to teacherclassoff.com, which is the name of the book. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And my students like finding it on weird sites and then telling, like they thought like Target stole my book at one point because they were like, yo, Reynolds, I checked your book out. I looked on Target and it's on there. I'm like, guys, it's all right. Like I still get paid from those situations. Yeah, and then over on YouTube, Real Rap with Reynolds on YouTube, you have like over, I don't know, like over 400 videos now that folks that are just there for everything from how to have parent-teacher conferences to like how to have real, what do you do when your whole class is failing? What do you do when no one does their homework? And then cool stuff like how to have a cereal party because they're way better than pizza parties and then get through with the least nutritional value and it's the best day of your whole year.
Right. But thanks for coming on and I'll see you next time.
Thanks, bro.
Thank you for having listened to the First Gen Teacher's Lens. We'll see you here next time.